8:04 a.m., Monday, February 7, 2011. Will the House Secretary call the roll?
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative Seaton. Representative Feige.
Here.
Representative Pruitt.
Here.
Representative Sisna. Representative Kawasaki. Chair Dick.
Here. Okay, Representative Seaton has been excused. He's celebrating his father's 102nd birthday, and that's a celebration. Wow. Oh, my. Representative Feige and Wilson will leave briefly. They have a previous commitment at around 9 o'clock, so we'll understand if you leave. We do have a quorum, and at this time I'd like to remind everyone, including myself, to turn off cell phones. And before we start, I'd also like to remind us that teachers in schools are the temporary custodians of other people's greatest treasure. And we might not see them from here, but I really do believe that what we do this morning is going to impact down the road. We've always got to keep those little guys at the lunch boxes in our sight. So, today, do we have Superintendent Crumley online?
No, we don't.
Brief at ease.
I will be assuming the role of chair while Representative Dick presents to us this morning. So if you would, Representative Dick, please continue or start your presentation.
Thank you. Well, education is, this is why we're here. This is our passion. We've all chosen to be here. And I have some views. I don't have the only opinion, but I do have a... based on my experience, I have an opinion that I'm pretty passionate about. So I thank you for giving me attention here, and I'll try to go quickly enough to keep you engaged, but not so quickly that I leave folks behind. First off, we've talked about it, that some districts are confident that they're succeeding, and some are. I've been really surprised that like Matsu and Petersburg and the other schools are doing exceptionally well. But some school districts know they're not doing well. Many feel like the system's broken. Some experience 40% dropout rates, some higher. I was recently talking with an individual from a village, and that individual told me that many people in the village can't remember the last graduate from that village. Also, we've had the conversation, the University of Alaska system often has to spend a whole year, academic year, preparing rural and urban students for 100-level courses before they even start in freshman-level classes. And I'd like to point out, too, the dropout rates don't indicate the success with those who remain in school and feel like their experience is not worthwhile. Engagement. In many locations, teachers spend a huge amount of time motivating in classroom management. I've traveled in schools where I've, in my own estimation, I didn't sit there with a stopwatch, where I thought 80% of this teacher's time is spent in classroom management and motivation, trying to motivate the students to want to learn. Students, in many cases, don't see the relevance of education. Many don't experience parental support, and either they're self-motivated or they're not motivated at all. How do we engage students? That's the key question. Do we use carrot, stick, some combination, or something else? I believe there's two components here, relevance and role models. Relevance. Everybody tells me there's no silver bullet. All right, well, maybe my bullet's got a lot of silver in it anyway. It's a pretty high alloy, all right? It's not a silver bullet, but it's got a pretty high percentage of silver in it. Both native and non-native Alaskans are very practical. They're independent. My definition of Alaskan is somebody who can do absolutely anything until you tell them to do it, and then they're paralyzed. They're just very independent, the old Alaskan spirit. And Alaskans respond much better to cooperation than coercion. Text and materials from the lower 48 with illustrations and examples that aren't relevant pose a double challenge for students. And we've had this, in the Bush, we've had this conversation for decades. If students can see the relevance of what is being taught to their community and to their perceived future, I really, really believe they'll buy in. That's why I'm giving this presentation this morning. I believe that becoming relevant has three components. One, we've got to demonstrate the connection to the community and future goals. We need to align state standards to careers as well as higher education. We need to utilize theme-based instruction, align themes to real-life interests. We need to embed current standards in those themes. For example, when we go beaver trapping, we take a gun, axe, ice pick, stove, tent, grub. We don't take grandma's picture of the toaster, a bobblehead, window curtains, and neckties. We take what is useful. We don't take anything that isn't useful. We're very practical people. And if we don't show students the relevance of academic concepts, they figure it's a bobblehead. What do we need this for is a question worthy of a respectful answer. They're just asking that we make sense. Here's a student. I believe we've got to make a connection between that student and the community. If we use familiar examples to learn new concepts, the students can make that connection. The student also has to be able to look to the future and see what some career, some hope, that we've got to connect to the material that we teach to a future goal, a visible future goal. We make associations with things we already know. For many village students, they're learning new concepts with foreign examples. Have you ever said, you ever had a conversation with somebody and you say, and you want to make a point. You say, well, did you see that movie, you know, XYZ, and you're just about to make your point, and they didn't see the movie? We've all done that. So you say, okay, I can tell them about the movie, but it still isn't going to make my point. So you abandon your example because it's just going to complicate the situation. It's not going to make your point. And that's my point, is that many times with rural students, village students, we're using foreign examples that they have no relationship to, and we're trying to explain a new concept. And so we're actually destroying our effort and making it teach a new concept because they're trying to learn the foreign example. So we make a huge assumption that students will someday be able to put the academic disciplines together and apply them to their lives. Our instruction is almost void of models. These are the academic tracks. And we assume that students, when they get done with 12 years of this, can somehow put it all together. The only really good example I see is science projects. Where in science, you've got the art, you've got the science, you've got the math, the graphs, the diagrams, and you've got the language, you've got the public speaking. And a science project does kind of bring all those things together. Unfortunately, in the schools I've visited and attended, what happens is the teachers try to sandwich science projects between the end of basketball and the beginning of testing because everybody's teaching to testing. So there's like a 10-day window that those bold teachers, if they can cram a science project in there, they'll do it. But anyway, that's the only really good example I see where we bring all the academic concepts together. When students look down the track of school and life, do they see a desirable target? You look down the sight, you see the moose. You look down the K-12 track, and what do you see? Now, we who've been through it can say, well, you know, we can look back and see that our education was excellent for us. But there's many starting here in the beginning or in the middle, look forward, and they can't see what we see. And so I'd like to... here we go. I'm going to show you a video that I did for Cookie and the Tribal Council. And this video will make, I hope it will make some of the point of the need for relevance. And the target audience for this video was Native students in Anchorage who we wanted to get involved in higher level math, who go on to ANSAP program, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program. That was a target audience. So... why study math?
That's a good question, and it deserves an honest answer. Math teaches abstract concepts and higher level thinking skills. Even as exercise prepare athletes for the actual contest, higher level math develops neuron pathways that become available for many other high level thought processes. An example is found in the Dene'ina riddles. Why did the elders ask these questions of the young people? Why did they develop the riddles? Lessons are hidden in the problem solving. There is a mental process involved that trains the young people to think in creative and abstract ways. Math teaches sequential problem solving. Math teaches finding creative solutions. Later in life, the individual is able to apply high-level processes to complex social and personal issues. While there are other means of learning higher-level thinking processes, developing math skills is one of the great ways to escape lower levels of thinking and train the brain in sophisticated ways. Did you ever hear anyone say, "I'm going to go Leatherman"? Of course not. Yet, when people work, they often use a Leatherman because it is so versatile. A Leatherman is a tool. Did you ever hear one say, "I'm going to go hammer"? Of course not. People say, "I'm going to build a garage," or "I'm going to frame a wall." A hammer is a tool. Math is also a tool that is used all the time. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. Math is a tool, a leatherman, to help you get the job done right. Being good at math will help you make good decisions. It'll protect you from being cheated. It'll keep you from embarrassing situations. Being good at math will help you land a high-paying job. There are a lot of different strengths that Alaskan Native people bring into modern society. Of the many, two are outstanding. For thousands of years, Native people of Alaska learned to adapt to, work with, and within their environments. Being Native isn't necessarily working with skins, fish, and beads. Being Native means making the most of what's available. This assumption holds true as Native people are found in construction, service industries, administration, artistic, and every other aspect of modern life. There is no corner of our modern society where Native people cannot adapt. A stronger component comes from our heritage as brilliant engineers, dog sleds, ocean kayaks, buildings from natural materials all reflect a genius of understanding and design. As modern technology enables us to be more efficient in subsistence lifestyles, Native people are becoming masters with modern instruments, tools, machinery, and equipment, inventing adaptations that have never been considered before. For example, a young man from Kotlik used his boombox to navigate to Nome over the open ocean of Norton Sound. He discovered that when his boombox's antenna sat parallel to the radiating radio signal, he couldn't hear KNOM when he was heading towards Nome. When he veered to the side, he picked up the signal. He followed the sound of silence all the way to Nome. There is another story of a plane that crashed, damaging the crop. One of the village men carved a crop on a birch. When the pilot took off, there was no vibration. The emergency crop got him home. A very strong component of the University of Alaska's engineering program is comprised of Alaska Native students. They are following their heritage of being creative, of building, of understanding materials and the stresses put upon them. It is a very natural transition for many Native students to become engineers.
We have this dormant ability, it's this creativeness that we can actually find ways that...
That's why I think that there is an ingenuity amongst Alaska Native engineers.
We take for granted, we can actually apply to whatever field, whether it be medical science, whether it be math, astronomy, you know, whatever case you want to go into.
I studied thermodynamics in college. A really fundamental way to keep the inside, the in-loop warm. And now, when I learned that, I was like, man, that's really smart. That's so ingenious to me.
As times change, we expect to see the adaptability of native people push us into every level of every aspect of successful careers. We can expect to see native people applying natural talents, natural ingenuity. And if hard times come, and there's a need to return to the land, those same instincts will still be intact.
That's an honest answer. I get it now.
Okay. And again, the intent of that video was to motivate young Native students in Anchorage to say, see the relevance of math, the relevance of higher level thinking skills, and motivate them and connect them with a possible future that they might not have imagined before. That was just one small effort. Okay, aligning state standards. I perceived there was problems with the past standards in the development process. First off, there was a select group of people. The outcome was predetermined by the people invited. They were highly motivated and capable people. And believe me, an effort was made. We had science teachers from the bush. We had science teachers from the urban centers. We had elementary, middle school, high school. We had a wonderful sampling of science teachers from all over the state. But only content people were in the meeting. There was only science people in the meeting. And there was no one from another discipline with veto power. If you get a bunch of science teachers together, we could paper the walls with sticky notes with all the things that we think every person on the face of this earth needs to know in order to get out of the eighth grade. But what we didn't have in those meetings was somebody from the English department saying, you know, I don't need that. What do I need that for, you know? I never used that in my life. We needed the check and balance wasn't there. Also, I'd like to point out that there was an uneven foundation. I came into the process about 12 years ago, but even before I came into the process, there was a group of people that got together and they were told, you're going to develop the standards, it'll never happen again. So whatever you want to be science standards, you better incorporate these standards. So they put their hearts and souls in it, and it was a list. But those standards that they came up with, there were macro, there was micro, there was one of them was that every student will understand the theory of relativity. And I thought, okay, who's going to teach it, you know? So there was these little tiny details, and then there was huge topics. Student will understand astronomy, you know, and then there was, anyway, it was a pretty uneven playing field. And we were told we could not redo the standards. We had to build upon those standards. Well, it was like having a stock car race on a tailing pile. I mean, it was up and down. It wasn't smooth at all. Okay, and we developed the GLEs, the grade level equivalents, so it developed from the standards that we wrote. It was a very difficult process. I mean, I'd go to write a GLE from maybe the middle school, and I'd go over to something I myself wrote, and I'd say, okay, what would be the GLE from this standard that I wrote? And I'd go back, and I have to go back and forth. It was a really awkward process. They were wonderful people, very dedicated. We were there because we wanted to be there. And hours and hours and hours and hours we put into it. But it was, again, it was kind of like having a stock car race on a tailing pile. So we built a huge assessment and curriculum superstructure has been developed on top of what I perceive to be a flawed foundation. Maybe somebody else doesn't, but I'm giving the presentation today. So I believe the teachers are highly skilled at delivering information, the how of education, but they might not be the best source for what information is necessary. There's a lot of teachers that have poured their whole life into delivering knowledge, delivering information. But maybe in 3 months during the summer, teachers might have a chance to work at some. I always work construction. I built boats. I built a hovercraft. I built ultralights, and I've tried to stay involved with hands-on stuff. But some teachers they'll travel, but there isn't that. We need the industry involved in the process. That's what I'm saying. So. I'm saying there's still good news. We can use and meet the standards. We don't have to rewrite the standards. Okay, there's many ways to say here's the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You can organize those numbers in many ways. Less than 5, greater than 5, even numbers, odd numbers, my favorite numbers, my not favorite numbers, prime numbers, non-prime numbers, single-digit numbers, not single-digit numbers, factor of 24, not factor of 24. That is to say, you can take information and sort that information in many different ways. I believe we can take the existing standards and sort them out and reassemble them in a better way, that the students will be able to relate to, and we won't have to go through that whole standards process again. I believe one of the answers is a theme-based teaching that evolves from community interest, embed the standards in the themes. Here we have the tracks, math, language, science, social studies. But there's nothing says that we couldn't have a theme dealing with weather that involves all of these. When I travel Western Alaska and I talk to the teachers, and many of them say, it's broken. And it's broken. I say, well, what do we do? And the answer I get most often, and the teachers whisper because they know it's not going to happen, at least they think it's not. What I almost always hear is theme-based teaching, showing the students how all this information comes together into a theme, something that they can identify, something they can relate to. Well, they didn't know I was going to be the chairman of the education committee. Here we go. So we can embed the standards into themes that relate to students' interests. Say, for example, we can put here weather. There's reading, social implications, arts, music, language skills, science, math, history. We could do the science of weather. We could do the math of weather. We could do the language skills of reading about weather. We could have shipwreck stories and all kinds of adventure stories that are, exploration of Alaska connected with weather, social implications. Who better than Alaskans knows about, I'll be at the meeting, if the plane can take off. If you live in Dutch Harbor, you certainly understand the social implications of weather. So the arts and music when it has to do with weather. Over here in hunting, you could read about hunting. You do the science of hunting and the instincts of the animals and dealing with wind. You could do with sound, the math of hunting, the trajectories of bullets and a lot of times hunting nowadays is an economic issue if you have to fly over the mountains. The history, local history of hunting, the national history of hunting, the music of hunting. Traditionally, most of the native people's songs had everything to do with hunting. It was all about the animals. So the arts, social implications of hunting, language skills involved in hunting. There's you could put almost any theme here in the middle and develop a wonderful curriculum around that. You would be teaching the reading, the social, the art, music, language, science, math, and history. We'd be teaching all of those, but we'd be doing it with a theme that the young people can relate to. And I thought about it. Well, if you put bird watching here in the middle, I might have to dig around a little bit. I could do reading about bird watching, social implications, the math of bird watching. I'd have to scratch my head for a little while, but I could come up with something on the math of bird watching. But the advantage of this is you could reach some students with hunting, some students with sports, some students with weather. We could reach students in a new and different way, and we could show them how the disciplines that we're teaching come together into a lifetime learning process. Okay, we could organize the themes in a way to meet and teach current standards while modeling lifetime learning by teaching to interesting themes. I didn't start flying until I was 60 years old. But once I did, the weight and the balance, I did the communication, I did this, there was the whole social implication of flying. There was no aspect of these. I read about flying, I knew the social implications, the language, the science, all of these are incorporated. I could have put flying in here, and I could have had a 6-month course. I could be teaching all the standards, but doing it in a way that I could relate to or a student could relate to. So, think about it. The only entity that organizes information the way schools do is schools. For example, state government, business, sports, etc., all organized differently. And here in the state government, do we have a math department and a science department and a social studies? No, we have the Department of Commerce and we have the Department of Education. We organize information differently. In business, you know, have the sales, you have marketing, you have production. Okay, another way I could say the exact same thing is this. We could have a class in Sawzalls, and we could learn everything there is to know about Sawzalls. You know, how many teeth per inch and reciprocating and variable speed and 60 cycles a second. And we could have a class on hammers, and we could have metal hammers and wooden hammers and waffle face and ball peen, and we could have claw and framing hammers. We could have a class in tape measures, and we could have the, you know, the wide ones and the skinny ones, and we could have the long ones and the short ones and the metric and the American standard. We could have a class in circular saws. Here's a worm drive saw and a and another, so we could do the number of teeth per inch and how many amps. Why is there no saw in the market that has, it is over 12 amps? The answer is it would throw the breaker. And, okay, we could know everything there is about Sawzalls, hammers, tape measures, and circular saws. And the question is, would we know how to build a house? We might not. We'd maybe have a good idea. The same way, if you know everything there is to know about math, science, social studies, and all of those disciplines, will you know how to apply them to life? Maybe, maybe not. Those of us who are here have learned how to do that. I'm suggesting that one of the reasons that students have disengaged is because they have not learned how to integrate that, because we haven't done a good job of modeling how to put all of that information together. When students look down the track on the K-12 path, do they see careers? Do they see a path from where they are to where they want to go? They can see higher education from here, but can they see over here in the careers? Can they see fishing from here? Some do, but often they don't. I believe the answer is to align state standards with career destinations. What academic skills are requested by industry? What personal skills and attributes are desired? That's work keys. Involve target industries in the alignment process. I've often thought how wonderful it would be if we could tell students, we've been to industry, we've been to where you're going, and we've did our homework, and we found out what they want you to know. And so we've done our homework. Let us help you get there. How much better is that than what we're doing now and saying, trust us, believe us, someday you'll get to use this, even though you don't see how it all comes together at this point in time. I'm exaggerating, you understand, but I'm exaggerating to make a point. Okay, educators alone are not able to do this. We're preparing students for the future, but there were no people from the future in the standards development meetings. There was no people from the tourist industry, from the from the construction industry, from the mining industry, from the bird watching industry in Alaska. There was nobody there to speak to those us science people who were filling the walls with our sticky notes. And I've talked to the people in math and the other disciplines, and it was very similar in those as well. Okay, I believe we must include an entrepreneurship component in developing standards. If you drive down any road in almost any town, you look to the right and your left, and what do you see? You see small businesses. You see the efforts of entrepreneurs. And yet, if there are any, there's not many classes in entrepreneurship, in our schools. Okay, stop. If there's no real-life examples and applications exist for the content we're teaching, we should stop teaching it. There's enough information that needs to be taught. Almost every educator has these sacred cows that, okay, this is really important, and I need to, students need to, they got to have this because I had it. But I really believe there needs to be a sifting and sorting process here where if there's no real-life example and application exists, we should stop teaching it. Much of our curriculum is anachronistic, and I looked it up, and that's a real word. Our mission is to prepare students for the future, not the past. We need to align our curriculum with the students' perception of their future. It doesn't matter as much what we see as what they see. If they can see down the track, they can see something out there that they relate to, that they want to, they will be self-motivated. And then I believe teaching will become much, much easier. Okay, Alaskapedia and. Bill Gates is a really bright boy, and He had an idea, and he said, okay, I'm going to do a digital encyclopedia. And that was called Encarta. And it was a great idea. But when you look something up nowadays, do you use Encarta? We all go online and we all go to Wikipedia. It was a volunteer effort. It just blossomed. It bloomed. Everybody wanted to share what they knew about whatever it was that they entered into Wikipedia. I would like to see an Alaskapedia where Alaskans from all professions and careers can contribute by showing the connection between their careers and the academic concepts we teach. Example, we could solicit real-life applications for ratio and proportion, a persuasive letter, trigonometry, applications of history on today's issues, use of the arts and science, and science and the arts. I believe if we had a website where people could Alaskans can contribute. We say, please send to us anything that you know that's in your career, your daily life, that would help us teach students and show them the relevance of the education we're giving them. I believe we'd be flooded. We'd have the Alaskapedia. And the fiscal note on that would be pretty close to zero. Okay, I also think we need to look to ebooks. Great possibility for replacing textbooks with locally relevant examples, illustrations, and contents. Years ago, when we did curriculum, it was very difficult because we'd have to almost rewrite textbooks. But nowadays, you know, with digital media, we could drop Alaskan examples and Alaskan explanations, even specific to the Mouth of the Yukon. We could drop them into, amongst the textual materials. Okay, relevance. It's not like you have to massively change curriculum to be relevant. The more you do it, the better it gets. If you're a little relevant, it gets good. If you're more relevant, it gets better. It's not like it's going to, take millions of dollars to change what we're doing. For years, culture has been an add-on. Okay, on Friday, Sam's going to come in and teach us how to make nets. Well, how about the math associated with nets? You know, how many fathoms, converting fathoms to feet? And if you have 20 fathoms of stretched mesh, how many fathoms is that going to hang? People from down your way should know the answer to that one. It needs to be a living component embedded in every lesson in every community. And again, with digital media, we can do it now. Before, 10, 20 years ago, it wasn't possible. But we can do it now with digital media. Okay. That deals with relevance. Now I'd like to speak to role models. Problem: many positive role models have left small communities in pursuit of careers and adventure elsewhere. Solution: make positive role models age 18 to 28 available by digital media. This will reconnect students to successful role models just ahead of them. You know, if somebody my age goes back to a small town and says, this is what I did, they're not going to identify with me. But I have a daughter who's an excellent teacher in Palmer Wasilla. I have a son who's working for FAA. I have a daughter who's a realtor. I have another daughter who's a wonderful mom. I have a son who works in sawmills. If they were to go back to the communities, or even if students could click on a 2 to 5 minute interview with them, and they would see that, there is somebody out there, the positive role model would be right in front of their face. If every day teachers could click on a 2 to 5 minute video interview with a successful person from the local area, student hopes and performances, I believe, would soar. And success doesn't have to be, end up in the legislature. I mean, success could be win the Yukon 800 boat race, I mean, success has many, many different faces. So I really believe we can easily nowadays bring back to students the role models that have left just by using digital media. Okay, this is a video I did. If you have to leave, go ahead. This is a video I did where I was trying to show young Native students that they needed a vision for the future. And again, the same target audience was the young people that in Anchorage who were struggling with math, but I tried to motivate them to get involved in math classes so that they could end up in the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program. Excuse me. Okay, there's the cursor. Here we go.
biology, and then I'm going to be going to medical school to become a general surgeon. I don't want to just work at a regular job. No, I want to do something with my life. Because I really, instead of working 9 to 5, you know, I'd rather save lives and just feel like I've done something important to become a mentor to others too.
Well, God, yeah. How do you get a vision when you're a young person? Where did your vision come from?
Well, as far as vision goes, I would say that parents are very, very, very important in setting expectations.
Well, my goal is to become an engineer and to go back to Kotlik and build a couple of bridges.
What gets you through the hard times?
My commitment for school and to accomplish my goals, because through my dad's eyes, he says that once I start something, I never give up until I'm done.
I'm looking forward to being a mechanical engineer in a couple of years, and I don't think without ANSEP I would be doing that. Probably knowing that those hard times, after it's all done and said, it'll be worthwhile, because down the road, you're going to have a degree, you're going to be making money, and you'll have a little more cash in your pocket. If you're from a small village, I can understand, because, you know, I grew up till I was 14 in the village, and to get out of the village, just study. I mean, you know, do your math, do your physics.
As young people go through the educational system, many feel at a loss. They are asked to make career decisions before they have a clear sense of who they are and what they are good at.
I'm interested in engines and designing something like a snow machine or a car.
Young people today are distracted by thousands and thousands of voices.
I can shoot that!
Young people need to follow their inner voice.
Focus, focus. Don't quit now.
A discerning that'll lead them in their personal way.
I want to get a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering, and then I want to go downstate and get a Master's in Project Management. And I want to make a name for myself, and I'm going to be somebody. College was that for me.
If you have those expectations, you have a drive in you to meet them. Mm-hmm. You have no expectations, you're kind of floundering.
My career goals are to be a civil engineer, and ANSEP's definitely taken me there so far. For the first semester, I got a GPA of about 2.9, which is not bad for a freshman. Well, what I really want to do is actually build the buildings or structures that I want to do, but so far, doing AutoCAD and drawing and designing the buildings has been a lot of fun for me, and architectural engineering has kind of been my draw, I've been kind of drawn towards it recently.
The thing about the Raven is he is a creator. He is a person who makes things happen. He's talked about as someone who can transform himself. In all these stories about the Raven, what he does is he decides on something that he wants, and then he makes it happen. That's an example of how, if we become highly achieving people and highly successful people, we can become like that Raven. We can decide what it is we want to do, and then we can make it happen.
I'm about to graduate in May, and maybe work for a Native corporation. I did a couple internships, and that really opened my eyes to people like me, and they essentially thought I did good work. So you know, it was a big step up to my confidence. It's not actually that hard. Most everybody can do it.
My career goal is just to be a mechanical engineer. In the meantime, I'm trying to be a designer. I'm an engineering technician, looking after. So I'll do that until I graduate, and I'll be an engineer. I can make a lot of money. It's like some of the engineers at work, they make $50 an hour. A lot of money. You can make that too.
If it's in your heart to be one, mm-hmm. That's all it takes. It's the passion And once you have that passion, you have this vision. Once you have this vision, it'll consume you until you get it. I mean, it takes up a life of its own. And once you have that, there's no denying you.
Perhaps at the end of our lives, the biggest question will be, did I find my place in the world? And did I fulfill it?
With a good vision, you'll have a good answer.
Okay, that video isn't exactly what I was talking about, but it was close. Could you imagine if every morning a teacher clicking on a video with one of those young students saying, I want to be this, I want to go here, I want to do that, this is what I want to do, I'm going to work here, I'm going to go outside, get my master's, I'm going to come back to Alaska, I want to be a role model, I want to be a mentor. Could you imagine the impact that would have on young people? If every morning they could see another young person, I'm just saying native here, but any person, especially from their community, somebody that, it's my uncle's neighbor or something like that. If they could, somebody they could identify with that would, is also being successful. Okay, in conclusion, problem. The biggest educational problems exist because students do not see the connection between what is taught and their perceived future. Answer. Make curriculum relevant by aligning the curriculum with the student's view of their future. Align state standards with community references on the local level. We will not tell districts how to teach. You've got to be plain on that one. That's certainly the prerogative, and if we try to come up with a one-size-fits-all on that one, it's one-size-does-not and never will fit all. We can come up with meaningful themes, both state and on the local level. And careers. We need to align the state standards with careers. Another answer is we need to reconnect role models with home communities by digital interviews. Relevance and role models are a huge component of correcting ills in remote communities. When education is a ladder to a visible hope, young people will climb it. Dropout rates will drop and suicide rates will follow. Districts who are now succeeding will experience even greater success. And I'm sorry that Representative Wilson isn't here because I put that line in for her because I know her, the school district that she's in is doing a wonderful job. But I believe that that when they, if they do incorporate more locally relevant examples, theme-based, I really believe even those that haven't success will have a greater success. So, thank you.
Well, very good. Thank you, Representative Dick, for that presentation. Right now, as we kind of switch up, we'll be taking a brief at ease, and I think we'll be back possibly with I think we do have the superintendent online, so we'll be able to proceed with his presentation afterwards. All right, so brief at ease.
The Education Committee come back to order. I'm responding to a dynamic that's going on here. We're going to hear a presentation by Superintendent Bob Crumley. And Superintendent Crumley, for 1 second here, we had a couple of absences this morning, and then we had a couple of two more representatives who were taken up for a press conference. So there's only two of us here, but we've this is the second time we've scheduled you. What I'm going to do, if you don't mind, is I'm going to have the video of this video of your presentation, put it on a DVD, and I'm going to give it to all of the committee members that aren't here. So I apologize. There's only Representative Pruitt and myself here right now. We had a quorum, but I'm very interested that every member of this committee hears what you have to say. So, Superintendent Crumley, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you.
Okay. I very, very much want to respect your time and your presentation here. So I do promise I will get a copy of this presentation to every one of the committee members. Is that okay?
That works wonderously. I appreciate it. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Just go ahead and if you just introduce yourself for the record, and we're going to show Tetitlik on the Google Earth, and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you very much. So, yes, my name is Bob Crumley, superintendent with Chugach School District. I've worked for Chugach School District for 16 years as a teacher, principal, assistant superintendent, and been superintendent for the past 6 years. Do you have a copy, real quick, of the PowerPoint that I did send down?
We have that, yes.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm going to just walk through that and discuss each page if you want to just kind of follow it, if that works. Does that work okay?
Yeah, that works well. The committee members, we have a copy of that in front of us, and Sheila is pulling it up right now so everybody in the room can see it on the wall. Okay, we're ready to go.
Okay, so we are Chugach School District. We're in Prince William Sound. We have about 250 students. Our communities are Chenega Bay, Tetzetlik, and Whittier, and we have a growing homeschool program. And I just want to say thanks, first of all, to you, Representative Alan Dick, for asking some of the districts to share what they're doing. There's a lot of good happening in education, although we hear in the papers all the time that we're not doing so well. So thank you for asking for some of the practicing educators to speak. On the second page, so the next slide, I can talk about our reform process, which began in 1995, and we have this process, plan, implement, evaluate, refine, that we use for everything. It's just standard operating procedure. But 15 years ago, we saw our results were miserable, and we didn't want to tinker with our district. We just wanted to overhaul it completely, and that's what we did. The wheel that you see to the right is called our shared purpose. In the center is the shared purpose, and then the core values are on each of the handles on that wheel. That took about a three-year process of community engagement to develop, but it is reflective of the words, direct words from our students, staff, and community members through that process. Next slide. This slide is just kind of an overview. This is about what works. And as a real high altitude perspective of what works, we talk about our school district as a system. Before we had this reform effort, we were a whole bunch of different programs that seemed to be disconnected. We were chasing the fad of the year. And all of these changes were counterproductive. Sometimes we felt the changes were just changes for the sake of changing. So now we have a student focus, a staff focus, a leadership focus, community and communication focus, finance and facility focus, those five focus areas all aligned and working with other organizations. Next slide. Student focus, I'll talk about quickly. It was good to hear some of your report, Representative Dick, on what needs to happen in education. It sounds very much aligned with what we've done. We have relevant local standards that we developed with community input. These standards are kindergarten through 12th grade. Actually, we have preschool standards as well. They are the skeletal framework for our entire system. They are a clear roadmap from kindergarten through graduation of what every student must accomplish and improve proficient in order to graduate. They're local, they include required academic content standards, character standards, service learning standards, career development standards. They, in addition to content, they include process standards. The processes are just as important and they're required just like the content. The processes of goal setting are just as important as the scientific process or scientific method. The writing process and the math problem solving process are taught time and time again using different content. But those are equally important with prioritizing processes or time management processes, things that we as adults use all the time that we have to make sure our kids have. Moving down, we have the balanced instructional model. Real quickly, that is, in a nutshell, we make sure, and we spend a lot of time teaching our teachers, training our teachers, that we provide direct instruction with application-based instruction. So we have direct instruction, like you and I may have received when we were in school. but we balance that with opportunities for students to apply the knowledge and apply the skills they've learned in simulations or real-life settings. We have diagnostic prescriptive assessments that we develop ourselves. We have a meaningful reporting system. We call it AIMS, Aligned Information Management System. It's all paid for out of federal grants. We've been developing it for over 10 years. We have a team of guys in India that are working on it 24/7, so it's pretty sophisticated, but it's very meaningful. Students have access to their portions. Parents have access to their portions. So there isn't a question about how they're performing or how quickly or slowly they're advancing. Our graduates give reports before they graduate, during their final year. They give graduate reports to our school board. So our board is well informed of each and every graduate who's about to earn a diploma. And that graduation report has to include a school for life plan. What are they going to do next? We have multiple support systems for our students. Of course, a laptop program. You hear about the one-to-one program occasionally. We began a one-to-one program, you know, probably 12 years ago, just because that's what students need. They need that equipment to operate in today's world. Nutritional breakfast program. We decided to provide breakfast for our students so that they started the day fed and ready to learn, and also that increased our attendance rate. Sometimes in some of these situations, in a lot of the situations, that's the best meal they get of the day. So they get to school and they get that meal, and then they're ready to learn. Early childhood, you know, out of our foundation formula, we pay for preschool. We pay. We have a partnership grant with four other districts for parents as teachers. We've been doing that for 6 years. And then finally, our Voyage to Excellence program. Well, let me back up. One other thing I did hear you mention was, Representative Dick, was the thematic approach to teaching. One piece of training that we do for all teachers is thematic unit training, and all of our teachers are required to prepare thematic units on an annual basis, instruct those, assess those. And in addition, all students are required to have individual learning plans. Teachers help students develop those as students get older and are more able and capable to help write those. They begin to take over writing their own individual learning plans. Now back to the Voyage to Excellence program. This is a very successful program. I left information with most of your offices down there. There's a CAPSIS proposal entered in through Chris Tuck's office right now. We're hoping that we'll have some other offices help support that. But it's a year-round program. We bring kids into Anchorage. We have partnerships with six other districts, and we've actually been bringing in kids from additional districts. But they come in and they have these internships and job shadows, and we have a summer camp that we just don't have enough room for. And so our proposal that we're hoping to have support for is to expand the program to help meet the growing wait list need that's out there. But that program has a 98% graduation rate over the past 5 years. So that's the student focus. The other ones aren't quite as long. Staff focus. We do a lot of staff training, three times, you know, what the state allows us to put into our annual calendars, which is 10 days. So we put those 10 days in, but we also provide a lot of training outside of that summer training, and sometimes during spring break we'll pull off some training. There's a performance evaluation process, a teacher evaluation process. This is something that's near and dear to me. At one point, the Commissioner of Education asked what we should get rid of in education. I told him at that time that getting rid of the teacher evaluation process would be okay with me because it wasn't helping teachers get better the way my experience showed me that it was being used. It's kind of the dog and pony show process. So in my district, I developed this performance evaluation process, and I personally evaluated all staff three times a year. It's focused on each and every person improving, constantly improving. And we have a very robust performance pay system. teachers and support staff to earn additional salary based on their performance scores. The other districts that partner with us in this are Lake and Peninsula and Cusa school districts. And I'm sorry to say there's a federal grant that's been supporting us to help support them in this program, but that grant ends after this year, and they won't receive our support for that, financial support for that, but we will continue our portion for our teachers, and I've already heard from the other superintendents that they're looking for ways to support the sustainability of performance pay in their districts. We've increased our teacher retention. You know, before we started this whole reform process 15 years ago, we had, you know, in the 50th percentile teacher turnover every year, and now we have, you know, some years we have 100%. Last year, I think we had 95% teacher retention rate. So we value the staff. We go through a thorough hiring process. We don't hire somebody until they've been to the village, met with the students, staff, and community, and we make sure it's a good fit for them as well as for the students. Moving on to the next slide, the leadership focus slide. We have multiple initiatives focused on leadership training. Most near and dear to me is VOICE, was what a program I started, and we call it VOICE because we want to make sure that students have an authentic voice and some authentic authority in what happens in our schools. And so in the past, we had a student council system, very traditional student council system with president and vice president and treasurer and meetings. Those components of our student voice program are still there, but we've expanded that student council model to include the interests of all students. Prior to changing to this voice program, students were disenfranchised from student government because it seemed to them as if it was a popularity contest. And that they didn't really, once they were voted in, they really didn't have any authority to make any change. And so we changed that, and now we allow students to become, just like a president or a vice president or a treasurer, we have athletic directors, nutrition directors, communication directors, technology directors, the green director, like they work on alternative energy, recycling, and cleaning up and so forth. So we link it to the students' interests, and it's very relevant to them. So that's part of the leadership. Of course, we do a lot of leadership training with staff and with school board and administration. The one thing that we really focus on is doing the external evaluations of our system. I know Kenai and Anchorage and Matt Spoo have probably all conducted pretty big, extensive external evaluations. Because we're small, we can't afford such big external evaluations, so we look for cheap external evaluations, and those are usually associated with some kind of an award program. So in 2001, we went through that process, and we were the first to receive the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award in the area of education. Prior to that, there weren't any education organizations that received that award, and usually, you know, just the Boeings and the Hewlett-Packards and the etc. The big companies were receiving that, so we were kind of a surprise, but we received that, and the main part was not the award, the important part was the feedback. They give us a 50-page feedback report about what we can do to get better. Alaska began its own program based on that same model, and in 2009, we went through that process again, and we received the APEX Award in 2009, but we got another 50-page feedback report. This last fall, I needed to get a better understanding of what's happening in all of our school communities, so I spent 60 hours and 37 minutes talking to individual community members, parents, teachers, students, etc., and doing a superintendent survey so that we could get a real deep and thorough understanding of what's working, what's not working, and how we can get better. And finally, strategic planning. We don't like to use traditional strategic planning processes because in the past we've seen That leads to some very nice binders that sit on shelves and collect dust, and we wanted something that worked well for us that we could pull off the shelf daily and use to help us make decisions. And that's where we're heading with our strategic planning process. The next slide, community and communication focus. I won't talk a lot about this. A lot of it's written down there. I don't need to read it to you. The area of community engagement is so important to us, and sometimes it's our most challenging thing to accomplish, because when we're doing well, people don't think they need to help out, but we never can give up on getting those parents and the community involved. We helped Chugachmiu, who is a Native regional nonprofit, get a grant to help pay some parents to come into our schools, pay positions to come in and help out in our schools and things like that. So that's something that we can never stop focusing on. The next slide, finance and facility focus. This, you know, some people think money is the number one resource, and it is an important one, but it comes in third place on our list. You know, the people, the students, and the staff, and so forth are our number one resource. Our number two resource is time, and our number three resource is money. And we have to be very thrifty and frugal just to make sure we can live up to our financial obligations from year to year, and to make sure we go to every length possible to meet the needs of our kids. And so I don't need to spend a lot of time on this sheet, but the next sheet has a chart on it, and it says why assertively search for outside resources. This chart is simply an example of why I have to spend a lot of time looking for outside resources. My challenge each year is I commit to teacher contracts right now, this time of year, but I won't find out what the state's going to give me for funding until this time next year. In fact, I haven't even found out for this school year what the final amount is that I'm going to receive from the state to operate this district. So there's this year lag between knowing, between what I have to commit to and when I finally know how much I have to spend. And if you look at the 2008 column, specifically, this is one example. You can see the base student allocation in 2008 was 5,380. That was a 0% increase from the year before, while inflation went up 4.6%, and that was in Anchorage, so I don't, you know, rural Alaska, that's going to be different. Statewide, we had, if you go clear down to the bottom, we had an increase of 2.5% in graduates. So that's just an example, like I said, of one reason why school districts more and more are being compelled to look for funding outside of the state. And, you know, we're producing more graduates, but from year to year, our buying power, our spending power is erratic at best. And we don't have any control over that, so we have to look elsewhere. The next sheet, second to last, is called the fact sheet. On the left column, you'll just see some of the statistics prior to our 15-year reform, and you'll see some pretty miserable results on the left. To the right, you'll see some results that are okay, they're better. We have a lot of room for growth still. In fact, we have a little bit of a downward trend in language arts and math. I know exactly why that's happening, but I don't need to go into detail on that here. I certainly know we have room to improve, but the challenge was we saw really quick results when we started with reform. We climbed to some new levels, but the challenge was to sustain that, to make it the standard operating procedure or the norm, that this is just the way we do business now. These new high levels of performance is just how things operate. So that is the end of my presentation. The last slide just kind of shows how we make sure that we all keep student focus. We all work for student focus, and we keep that at the top of the top priority in our district. So I'll take any questions if you have those.
Excuse me, thank you. That was the I continue to be amazed when we get these presentations. It's Alaska is such a huge state, and we're so isolated. And I've always heard good things about what you were doing. And I would like to mention too that Representative Sisna joined us during that during your presentation. So we increased our attendance here by 50%. But I will make sure that the other representatives get the video of this and that we all get to see that. Are there any questions from the other Representative Pruitt, Representative Sisna?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm catching up really fast here. I know I've heard that your school has met many of your challenges with people who really admire what you've done, and that our state and throughout our state, we've got some really huge challenges that we're dealing with. I'd love to ask, and I was not here for the entire program, but you did talk about community involvement, which is a really huge thing in my mind in trying to actually make sure that the students do learn the thing that's really vital, and that is the kind of the local wisdom and the opportunity of seeing ways to grow the local and build on the local opportunities and resources. And every community does have elder knowledge and elder wisdom to pull in. Can you give some examples of things that your school has done? Any stories?
Wonderful stories. I could bore you to tears probably with it, but I will try to focus it. And as you look at the community and communication focus page, which is towards the end of the presentation, there are a number of things listed there. When we began this process, we used what we called Alaska Onward to Excellence program, and that was about a three-year training and community engagement grant process that we used. And we knew, and I specifically knew, at that time I was in one of the villages, but getting people to come in the door and to a meeting in the school and talk about education was a challenge. So we did anything and everything, whether it's potlucks and food and student presentations and door prizes, et cetera. Once we got them in the door, we found out everybody is an expert on education, and that was a good thing because they all had stories. What we had to make sure of is that when we got their input, we used their input. No longer could we just gather input and then continue going about business the same old way. So we were very strategic about publicly showing how their input was being used. And an example of that is that they talked quite a bit about including the Native culture in our school system. And so we have cultural and communication standards that are required kindergarten through graduation, just like any other content area. And we began in one of our villages of Tetitlik. The teachers spirit used to run this and operate it. We call it Cultural Heritage Week. But we throw the traditional schedule, the school schedule, out the window, and we bring in artisans and craftsmen and experts from the culture, from around the region, around the state, actually, and they come in and they teach. And some of those folks are from the community itself. And people will come in from all around the state. We have other school districts that send kids and staff to this program now. It's been happening for, 12 or 14 years, I can't remember. But that kind of program, what was the intent in the beginning was that we would use the input, start that program, and slowly turn it back over to the community because it's their culture and they're the ones that are teaching it. And today I'm happy to say that that is happening. We support it however we can, but it's their week, and they have a committee, and they set up the schedule of what's going to be taught by whom, how it's going to be assessed, et cetera. It's been very successful. Is that kind of what you were looking for?
That's exactly, and thank you so much, and that's really a great story. That's good.
I do have a question, if you don't mind. On page 3, you talked about the performance evaluation process and the performance pay. And in my mind, I could picture some teachers perceiving that to be rather subjective. And how did that work for you?
Worked very well. Our teachers love it. In fact, I mentioned we have three partner districts. Lake and Penn and Hushbuck also participate in the federal grant to help fund that. But anyway, the teachers, as you might expect, were skeptical in the beginning. And performance pay and merit pay, incentive pay, all those things have a black eye in my mind because they've been rolled out poorly. And they're always focused on student test results only. Our system has a balanced scorecard approach, and teachers love it. With this balance, we have 10 different ways, actually 11 different ways teachers and principals can earn performance pay based on their performance. The lagging indicators of this balanced equation are the test results. They come at the end, and teachers in schools will receive performance-based pay depending on how the students performed on those exams. The leading indicators are an array of things, developing individual learning plans for students, becoming involved as a mentor or a mentee in these mentor-mentee relationships so they can continuously improve their craft, tutoring students, becoming highly qualified, attaining additional credentials. So some of these things that we like teachers to do, the leading indicators that lead, we hope, to improve student results, we know those things will actually, research tell us, those are the things that lead to improved student results. So teachers earn performance pay for participating. Again, that for most of those components, actually all the components, it's voluntary. The teacher feels that they just philosophically disagree with it, they can do so. Nobody in my district has ever done that. A couple in other districts have. But the performance pay is substantial. In order to fund it, years ago, we froze our increases on the salary schedule, the rows and columns, but we put raises into the area of performance pay. And that whole process through a number of years has allowed us to increase the amount of performance pay. For example, this year, teachers in my district, just for the teacher evaluation component, earned $10,200 in addition to their base salary for their performance as proven on this PEP process, performance evaluation process. Is that helping?
Wonderful. If you don't mind, I'd like to use you as a resource and call on you in the future if we have any questions here, because it does seem, because in my mind I could see some teachers as perceiving it as being very subjective, but it seems like you have to handle that. I would like to announce that Representative Wilson is back here. I do have two other quick questions, if you don't mind. One, it seems like what you're doing is it's wonderful, but you're very isolated. To what extent do you have interaction with other superintendents, and are you able to communicate those things that you're doing well to other superintendents?
I do. We have a group of districts that we're trying to replicate many things that we were doing, and our former superintendent started a nonprofit foundation, and he and a couple of former employees, teachers from our district, head that up, and now they spend most of their time in the lower 48 helping districts down there. There are four districts still that work with us and use the model that we use to varying degrees, and we continue to work with them. Mostly we work with them through grants, We, as I said, look for outside resources. So we look for a lot of federal grants that we partner with those four districts, Layton, Penn, Cuspuck, Bering Strait. Lower Yukon actually just joined, and UP is actually sending a lot of kids to us now too. So anyway, we partner with other districts. They like what we do, but because the former superintendent kind of went through this period of trying to help other districts and it wasn't very successful, we felt, my board felt, that we were perceived to have a bit of a black eye. So we've disassociated from that organization. It was called the Reinventing Schools Coalition. We don't talk to them anymore, and we just try to help other districts if they ask us. We are not out to try to sell anything to anybody.
Okay, thank you. Just one other quick question. In your correspondence program, forgive me, I'm kind of new to this. Is that only students within your district, or are you reaching out to all parts of the state?
All parts of the state. We have about 90 students in Fairbanks area, quite a few in Anchorage, Matsu, Valdez. We have our own students in our own boundaries, but it's a statewide program.
Very good. Does anybody else have a question? Well, I'm thrilled that you're on. I'm sorry that we kind of bumped you around time-wise, but I appreciate I know you're busy, but if you don't mind, I personally would like to get a hold of you sometime and continue this conversation, because it's a lot that you're doing that I need to catch up on, and it seems like you are a real resource. I do thank you for your presentation. Okay.
Thank you very much, and you can contact me anytime.
Thank you, sir. Also, the next on the next item here, I understand that we have Saichi Oba and Steve Musa here online available for questions, but we had made a decision earlier. We made a decision earlier because there weren't enough people here. That we would, I really do think all the members of the Education Committee need to hear this presentation on discussion of distance early learning opportunities. So if the folks online don't mind, I really would like to put this, because we've talked about distance education as an alternative for many of the problems that we have. And I think if we could wait until all the representatives are here and we could all be on the same page. This is an extremely important presentation. So if nobody would mind, nobody minds, I would like to put that off to a future date. And I say to you, Oba and Steve Musser, I appreciate your being online, but I really want to respect and treasure the. This presentation, so if you don't mind, we're going to put that one off. Is there any other comments? The next meeting will be Wednesday, February 9, and the following bills will be heard for the first time: HB 104, Alaska Performance Scholarship, and HB 5, Constitutional History Curriculum. If there's no other business, the meeting will be adjourned.